infertility sucks. We laugh about it, we cry about it, and we learn how to be a good friend with author and advocate Samantha Bush on this week's Band of Mothers podcast.
This is the Band of Mothers podcast. Band of
Mothers. Hello, breeders.
We love you.
We have an amazing episode with Samantha Bush, who could not be more delightful.
She is the author of Fighting Infertility.
Correct.
And I hate to say who she's the wife of because it makes us nuts, weird, but she is the wife of Kyle Busch, NASCAR racer.
Racer.
NASCAR racer. It's the new band. NASCAR racer extraordinaire.
Yeah.
If not the most
current famous.
Yeah.
And they have been dealing with infertility for over 7 years.
Eight years.
They had one successful IVF and have a son who's now 5 and a half. But before we get into our interview with her, you know, Tracy and I wanted to kind of address this issue from a Band of Mothers standpoint because, you know, it just goes to show that you never know what other people have gone through.
Are going through
to become parents. And there's always the oopsies, right? And there's always the like, oh yeah, we wanted to have a baby and we
looked at each other and then got pregnant.
Yeah. And those stories are great and interesting in their own right. But there are so many more stories of how you become a mom. Mm-hmm. And Tracy and I each have our own.
Mm-hmm. We do. I mean, I touch on it every now and then. Talked about it a lot, but it took me a really long time to get pregnant. I used to talk about it in the show. But you know, I can just so relate to Samantha's story. And one thing I'm just so grateful for is women like her and others who just openly talk about their journeys of infertility and trying to get pregnant, because it is such a complicated, complex, heartbreaking, stressful, painful, mind-blowing, mind-fuck is the only word I can think of. Like, you're literally taking medicine that makes you go crazy. Mm. You know, like, you're not even yourself. And it's expensive and it's scary and it's very clinical and scientific and it's...
And it's so hard not to compare yourself. I mean...
Shameful, yeah.
Yeah, there's so much like, you know, all I did is try to have a baby and now here I am in all this pain. Yeah. And all I wanted to do was what, you know, you're just like looking at MTV with like teen moms and you're like, how come these people get to have rage. Be parents?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
When I was trying to get pregnant, it was right when like Nicole Richie started having babies and all these kind of superstars that like openly lived super unhealthy lifestyles. Mm. Like, and I was so mad. Like,
was she living an unhealthy lifestyle then? Because I feel like she's like a super healthy lifestyle.
She's really turned herself around, but like not too long before that, I think she had got caught like driving wrong way up an exit ramp because she was, you know, on drugs or something. And, you know, there was just a rash of kind of what I want to say teeny bopper, like, you know, just pop stars that you and I had kind of grown up with, or people in pop culture.
Yeah, I remember that too.
And I remember writing a list. I kept a list. I think I still have it on my computer of all the famous women who, in my mind, like, didn't live a healthy lifestyle, never ate, probably had an eating. It's like so judgy, but then just got pregnant. And I was just so angry about it, let alone every single one of your friends just like popping out babies left and right, you know? And it's hard not to get mad about that. And then to our point, and this is why we really want to talk about it, is just to feel so alone and just so like you're the only one going through this. And Samantha touches on this a little bit. I mean, doctors, even gynecologists who are supposed to be there for women. I mean, I remember, and she ended up going through, you kind of go through a lot of doctors when you're trying to find out how to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. I remember my first gynecologist told me it's probably a calcium shortage and I should just take some Tums. I should just eat Tums.
Wow.
And then I'll have a better chance of getting pregnant.
No look into the fact that you had endometriosis.
Stage 4 endometriosis. I had a cantaloupe, I had a cyst the size of a cantaloupe taken out of me when I was 24. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A history of aggressive reproductive disease.
Yeah.
Just eat some Tums. It's a doctor. Gosh. You know, and so many women have gone through that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, miscarriages on top of it, which is, you know, your story.
I have a friend who had a pretty easy first baby, had a miscarriage between, but then in her DNC, they ended up messing her up with scar tissue and then basically told her she was never going to be able to get pregnant again.
Oh my gosh.
And then they went through fertility between the two, which is also an interesting thing, like whether your infertility was before your very first one
or secondary,
because then there's that, you know, again, it's so hard when you're in so much pain to put down the judgment. And this is why we wanted to talk about this, because as a band of mothers, or at least, you know, as what Tracy and I try to do is spread the love, right? And make sure that we're not judging each other and that we are really paying attention,
like listening to the words behind what's being said.
But that's so difficult. You know, if you're someone like you that took, you know, 5 years to get pregnant, and then you see people with a healthy child, you know, there's so many emotions involved where you can be resentful. I mean, I remember I had to throw a baby shower at work, and I had a miscarriage, and I just was like,
it's not fair.
It's a really bad day, you know, but then you're an asshole for feeling sad for yourself, you know, because you had to throw this other person's joyous occasion.
It's so complicated. I remember, Serena, if you're listening, I'm apologizing to you now, 55 years later, but I remember I had during all of my infertility struggles, and then because I had endometriosis, I ended up having a horrible appendicitis that caused me to have like a big, big surgery, and it slashed up a bunch of my intestines, and I was in the hospital for a week, and it was really bad. And then my fertility doctor, who never minced words and never sugarcoated anything, she's like, well, now you probably can't get pregnant because you probably have scar tissue on your fallopian tubes because of the surgery, and so that's probably done. And I was like, what?
Wow, that was really nice of
her. I remember, and I cried so hard for days, and I was, I think it was in May, but there was a rash of, there's like all these parties we were invited to, and I didn't want to go to any of them because I was so depressed. And my friend Serena's baby was due, and she had a breech, and she was having her second, and she was super, super scared about it, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And she had a breech, and she had the baby, I think, 2 days before I had my fallopian tube thing, and I couldn't even go to the hospital to visit her because I was in so much pain. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, that I couldn't see a newborn, and I've never felt good about it. But it's just, you just don't know what people are going through.
Well, and being a good friend to friends who are going through infertility is her understanding why you couldn't go see the baby,
right?
You
know? Totally,
and that is just part of that process. I think that bringing awareness to it, like Samantha's doing, or just paying attention to these really intricate, painful things that people are going through to ultimately then be on your mom Facebook group, you know, like
to then complain about
it. And then we're all just wiping asses again. We're all of our carpets are getting ruined at the same time. But totally. How we got there is so incredibly interesting.
It is. And it's so I guess what we're trying to say to you guys is take a listen, you know, whether you're done having children or you're starting to, it affects, you know, creating a family is so much bigger than just like Shay said,
just a penis in a vagina.
I mean, if it was that easy, there's so much that goes into it. And there's a lot that affects the male partner too, if that's how you're creating your family. Like, mm-hmm. and it had a huge effect on my marriage and long lasting, you know, mm-hmm. effects truthfully. And Samantha talks about that as well with her and Kyle, and her book is really great. Just opening those doors and just kind of shedding light on all that. So mm-hmm. just from a band of mothers, just take a listen to this, you know, let your heart hear other people's stories. And hopefully, like we always say, the next time you see a mom in a grocery store, you just don't know what's going on.
That's right.
And just give her a little love.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Samantha Bush, thank you so much for joining us on Band of Mothers podcast. We have so many questions to talk to you about. Thank you for coming on our show.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
And first of all, I just want to say I went through years and years of infertility myself. And so I loved your book. And I just want to say thank you for putting yourself out there, because even though you're very prominent family and you have access to things that other people don't, there is so much shame and emotion and the bravery it takes to talk about struggles getting pregnant does not go lost on me at all. So thank you for being so honest and forthcoming, because it does help. And Shay and I were talking about this. You know, my daughter's 10 and it took me about 5 years to get pregnant, and they were long, long, horrible years. And none of this was available. There wasn't this kind of support right. system when I was going through it. And I'd give your book to anybody. So
thank you
so much.
I feel the same way. When we started trying, it was a good 8 years ago now. And I just, there wasn't all these podcasts and apps and groups. And it was so lonely and isolating, especially when, you know, you have a group of friends around you that they're so loving and supportive, but they're all having kids like so easy, and nobody really understands what you feel like. And now this community has just spread and grown. And it's amazing that there's so many women out there connecting with each other and just making this process so much easier for those going through it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, putting yourself out there, especially on social, it's so wonderful to read the comments on your stories and your reels and your posts, because you can just feel the need, you know, that you are filling for a lot of women in the similar situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope by talking about it. And that was the hope with the book. You know, there was probably a lot of stuff that I could have left out, or a lot of stuff that, you know, when some people read it, they're like, I can't believe you admitted to being like that, or I can't believe you admitted to this, this, or that. I'm like, well, you can't just put all the good stuff into a book. Like, you have to share the raw, the unedited, the unfiltered side of things, so that people understand when they do experience those trials too, that they're not alone. Because I think that was what a lot of us feel, you know, like, why is this happening to us? I feel like I'm the only person going through these things or feeling these things. And even right now where I'm at in my journey, I'm still having some of those things. And today I saw a post where, you know, somebody was talking about having the exact same feelings I was. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not crazy. Yeah. You know, like it just helps.
For sure. Let's, you know, you just announced you just had an embryo transfer.
Yeah.
So give us an update. How are you feeling? What's going
on? Okay, well, you guys are like the first people I'm going to discuss this with. I'm literally like having, I think, some PTSD anxiety right now. I could have tested this morning and I panicked and I didn't. And it sounds so stupid because we've been waiting so long. And so I was sitting there this morning and I had, you know, the stick and I was like, I can't do it. Like I just panicked, and I feel like I've been so positive throughout this and so optimistic, and something this morning about now it finally being here, I'm like, I don't want to know. I'd rather keep telling myself I'm pregnant and not have to know. And so I'm supposed to go for blood work tomorrow, and I say supposed to, because I'm like, just, I mean, I'm sweating right now telling you. It's like I'm having a lot of anxiety.
Girl, I feel you. When I finally found, and I ended up not getting pregnant with IVF, but when I found out I was pregnant, it sounds so cliche. I took the cheapest pregnancy test. I didn't care. And then my husband didn't even believe me when it finally happened. So I totally, he didn't believe me until we saw a heartbeat on the monitor, like weeks, because it's so hard and to go through it so many times.
Yes. And
it does wear on you.
Just this last time when our surrogate had a failed cycle, I mean, every time, I guess it sounds silly now after we've been through a miscarriage and a failed cycle and now a failed surrogate cycle, but every time I just go into it like, yep, this is it. I got it. And I'm so let down. And that's how I had walked into this whole process still too, like very optimistic. We started again. I've got this. And then something this morning, I panicked. And so, to give you the long story short, I should be finding out today or tomorrow.
Right now, you're about to be on a stick.
Go get that stick, girl. Right, we'll sit here and watch you.
And the mothers.
We got you.
Live.
Yeah, no.
Live right here. No. So fill our audience into where you are in your journey.
Okay. So yeah, I could give you, it's been almost 8 years now. So my husband and I met, I was going into my senior year of college. You know, we dated for a few years, got married. Once all of our friends started having kids, we were in our mid-20s and we're like, okay, I think we're ready. And obviously no underlying health conditions, nothing to be a warning sign. So I got off birth control, and you know how it is. It's so exciting. And you're like, we're going to have a baby. And then month after month after month after month after month went by. And so now I'm Googling everything because there's not all these resources out there. And I'm calling my OBGYN and they're like, it hasn't been a year. Mm-hmm. Calm down. I'm like, okay, but I really feel like something's wrong. My periods are all over the place. And they're telling me, well, you've been on birth control forever. Like, you'll be fine. And so finally I had just a lot of health issues, like TMI, but I talk about in the book, like my hair was falling out. I was bleeding a lot. And I was like, okay, it's been a year. Can you like maybe see me now? Because now I'm feeling depressed. I'm isolating myself from other people. It's just getting harder. And so right away I go in and they do all the tests and they're like, oh, you have PCOS. And I'm like, okay, what is that? So we walk through all that and they put me on Clomid. So I did, this was so many years ago, 4 or 5 cycles of Clomid until I swear there was like a family intervention that was like, hey, You're crazy.
Can we talk about Clomid for just 2 seconds?
Yes.
That shit messes you up. It's
nuts.
Awful.
There's a chapter in my book called The Clomid Crazies.
Oh, yeah.
It's so bad. So can they intervened.
So for people who don't know what Clomid is, can you just give it, and who don't know who what PCOS is, just.
So PCOS, basically in a woman whose ovaries don't have PCOS, is every month a few follicles start to come up. One has the mature, the dominant egg that releases, and that egg is, you know, potentially able to be fertilized. My ovaries like to have a whole bunch of little follicles come up with a whole bunch of little eggs that would never do anything. And therefore the Clomid is supposed to help the eggs come to a full maturity. Well, nobody.
And it's a pill. It's something that you take orally.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And at this time, again, like I said, I was in my mid-20s. There weren't the resources available. So we just automatically thought, okay, it's me. This is the reason we haven't gotten pregnant. And so we are following what, you know, our doctor said, did the four or five cycles. I can't remember now. Ended up finally going to a fertility clinic when that didn't work. And I remember walking in and they were like, oh, can we see your husband's paperwork? I'm like, for what? I have the issue. And they're like, excuse me, have you really been trying for like 16, 17 months and he hasn't been tested? And I was like, what are you talking about? And, you know, and so he got tested right away and had male factor, which led us to do IVF. And so that's where I try to use my platform to advocate, you know, whether it's at home testing now, there's so many amazing different kits that you could get at home, or going to your doctor and being your own advocate and saying, hey, we're going to start trying. I'd like an ultrasound. I'd like blood work. My partner needs blood work and a sperm sample. Like, we need to know what we're playing with. And that's what I try to advocate for, because it was such a demoralizing time, and all of that could have been avoided. So from there, we went through IVF, and the first try, we had our son, Brexton. He's now almost six. He'll be six in May. And so, you know, at this time, we decided to start a foundation to help other couples pay for their IVF treatments. I was using my blog to start kind of opening up the conversation more, et cetera, et cetera. And so about 2018, we said, okay, I think we're ready to, you know, make Brexton a big brother. And we were completely naive, you know, even though we had now spent years in this field, I was like, well, it worked the first time. And we did genetic testing and I had a perfect pregnancy. So like, I mean, even the doctors were like, not as a sure bet, but like,
looking pretty good. Yeah.
It's a pretty sure bet. You know what I mean? And so we go in, we bring everybody in with us. I mean, got clearance from them to bring in like a social person to document like what the embryo transfer is like. And we showed the shots and all the things to just basically show people who were getting ready for this journey. Like, here's what it looks like. Like, yours might be different. Your protocols might be different, but like, here's some of the medicines you might encounter. Here's what the shots look like. Here's some of the side effects. So we go in, we get pregnant, we announce it right away, like on cloud nine, fairy tale, right? And we lost her a week after we announced that we were pregnant. So then there was just like a really bad spiral for a year that I talk about in the book a lot, just as individuals, as a couple, as a family. It was a really hard time. And so it took us a good year to decide to try again. And this time I was way too afraid to talk about it. We didn't tell our family. We didn't tell our friends. We were the only two people in the doctors that knew what was happening. And so we went and, it ended up being a failed cycle. And so they did all the tests and they were like, okay, on paper, we can't find anything. Like, we suggest that you know, you can try again, but we're not too confident in that. We think you need a surrogate. Like, that's the route that we would go. So we spent a whole nother year going down that route, which is a beast in and of itself, because in my mind, and this might sound silly, but when you meet with an agency, in my mind, it was going to be like match.com. Okay. Like, she was like, you fill out your profile and then we take their profiles and we match them and like we see where you align and then we set up these meetings. Mind you, this is during COVID, so it's like we're gonna have to do these virtual meetings. And I'm like, okay, so you know, we're like, all right, took us a while to decide, but we're like, all right, this is what we're gonna do. And then we go and they're like, oh, well, actually, we don't have applicants at the moment. And I'm like, oh, but I filled out my profile. Like, where's my match?
And you're like so, the only person on Tinder. Like,
yeah, very weird. Like, you just keep swiping. And it's like, just why is there screens?
No, there's no left, right?
And, you know, she's like, well, you know, our applicant pool isn't that large. And due to COVID, it's even smaller. So we're going to have to talk to some of our past surrogates, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, well, that's not what I expected. So, you know, as we're kind of waiting and trying to do that, we had a potential surrogate through a friend and everything was great. She didn't clear medical for fallopian tube, you know, issue. We had another lady that was, it was just all these things. So to make a long story short, it took us a good year, but we found the perfect lady and she was absolutely amazing. And, you know, local, we became friends, our kids were hanging out. She had perfect pregnancies, did the transfer, and it was, again, another fail. So from there, I was like, okay, what are we going to do? We have to do something. And so we ended up deciding to get various, you know, different opinions. She all came back as the same opinion that they felt like there was an issue with the embryo quality at this point. And so we decided to move forward with another clinic, just to know that we tried everything before we looked at different paths.
Right. So that's an interesting question, because how do you know when enough is enough?
Yeah. I mean, I think for each couple, it's different. Yeah. And eventually, like, you may know, but for us, like, that we're not there yet, you know. Right. We're still ready to keep fighting and keep trying. And so I just, you know, I love my clinic here that's local, but I knew in my heart, I was like, I just need to try something different in order to know that we tried everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Couple things you talk about in the book that I wanted to cover, just because our audience, you know, not everyone obviously goes through IVF, but I think at this point, you know, people who have gone through IVF. And one thing from my infertility journey is, well, there's two things that I think you've been pretty open about that I think are important to recognize. One, why you choose to do what you do versus why don't you just adopt, which is that knife in the gut to every mom who is trying to get pregnant naturally. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. And then the second is how it really affects you as a couple and the long-term effects of basically having to have sex on command. And it's real hard.
So to answer your first question, the why don't you just adopt? So, I mean, I'll be open and honest. I have looked into adoption. But, you know, I think that that's something that when people say, and I hate especially when they use the word just is what really bothers me, because it just makes it sound like you're going to say, I'm going to adopt and this lovely baby is going to show up and it's not going to be hard and have heartache that goes along with it. And people just make it sound like I literally called out this guy one day. I'm like, it is not like walking to the grocery store and being like, okay, perfect. And that's how people make it sound. And so I've talked with a lot of moms who have adopted. They have had to spend years and paperwork and go to different countries and stay there with their children and on and on and on. And I just wish people would know that adoption is not this snap of the fingers type thing. And
you didn't just go steal a baby.
Right. And, you know, for us, like, maybe one day that's where our path might lead. Yeah. But, like, I'm not there yet. Like, we still want to keep trying and we want to keep trying our own way. And so what I also educate people on is nobody would walk up to a pregnant woman at the grocery store and like, I can't believe you did that. Like, do you know there's other children out there that need homes? How dare you? How dare you have that baby? Like, we don't do that to other women. So why do we feel that it's okay to tell women in the infertility community? Like, I think adoption is a beautiful thing and it's a wonderful thing and it's not something that's taken off our plate yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's something that, who knows, even if this all works out, like, it might be something a few years down the line, we say, hey, I think, you know, we would like to try adoption. But I don't feel that women who go through infertility, they already have so many emotional stressors on them. Like, the outside world doesn't just get to tell them what they need to do. And also, I just want to continue the education of just adopting. Like,
that's such a great point.
It's such a triggering statement, and not only for women in the infertility community, but I believe it's a triggering statement for those that have adopted and have
gone through that process. Because it isn't easy. You're so right.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing that people don't understand is adoption isn't any cheaper than IVF in terms of time and just the money. Like you said, like many people go to foreign countries. I mean, two tickets to China doesn't just, you know, you don't, it's not a $38 fare on Southwest. Like, it's expensive endeavor. And when I was going through it and we did start to look into adoption, because at some point you're just like, okay, well, this isn't going to work. You have to almost prove yourself as a worthy parent when you're wanting to adopt for perfectly good reasons.
Right.
But when you are already trying to prove to the world that your body can actually carry a baby, and then someone's like, well, explain to me why you deserve to adopt a baby. It is a layer that no one really talks about at all.
No, exactly. And I think it's going to take women speaking out about it who either, you know, are going through infertility or who have adopted to explain all those emotional stressors and triggers and time and effort and everything else. Because I mean, really, for a lot of people out there who offer that advice, I think that they offer it because they're just very clueless to the entire process that goes into it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we know just from, you know, watching a lot of your stuff online too, that you guys are rooting for a girl. So how does that work when you're doing IVF treatments? Like, how many embryos, like how has that process been for you, knowing that you would prefer a sex?
No, so I think that's funny. I think some of that has got spun through, you know, the transfers that we have done and then the media, right? So I think the media is just like, oh, they're doing it just to have a girl. And I'm like, no. Slow your roll. You missed the first other three sentences we talked about before that. So what had happened was during our first cycle, we had 8 embryos, but 3 of them were graded the highest. And one was Brexton, obviously. And then the other 2 were girls. And then you know how they can kind of look and be like, well, based on certain things, like we think this and that. And so then the next one was a girl, but she wasn't as viable, right. As the first 3. And then the other ones that were boys were kind of in that category of like, it could work, like they look good, but not as good as the first 3. And so that's what had happened. We obviously transferred Brexton. And then we were like, okay, well, it kind of makes sense. A, I'd love to have a boy and a girl. B, the next 2 best ones are girls. And so we went down that path, and then on the 3rd one, we did the last girl one. And then, you know, we talked to the doctors cause we're like, hey, we do have 4 boys left. And they looked at them and they're like, look, if you're at a 25% chance with 2 uteruses, like that's not even national standard level right now. Like that's not good. We don't think that these embryos are viable. You know, they were like, if your surrogate had shown anything, right? They were like, but the fact that she's had 2 kids, she's a proven uterus, you're a proven uterus, and now between 2 uteruses we've implanted 4 babies and we have 1, like that's not good,
right?
And so then we decided to obviously go back to square one after talking with numerous doctors, ended up at CCRM in Denver. I will say, you know, I was like, okay, because, you know, you obviously can't determine the sex, right? And I was like, they're all going to be boys. I can almost guarantee it. And my husband's like, why? I was like, because I love my son. I love racing. He loves his mommy so much. But it's funny, like we've always talked about a boy and a girl. Like have a brother, yada, yada. And I'm like, there hasn't been anything that has gone like to plan. And I was like, it's so rare to get a lot of embryos and for them to be all one sex, you know? And so it was just the joke that we're like, boy, mom, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like came to terms with it. And so we go in and we, you know, do the egg retrieval, they do the embryos, blah, blah, blah. And so the nurse calls and the embryologist, I'm sorry. And she's like, hey, I just want to give you a report. So actually you had 5 day 5 high grade AB embryos. Like they look phenomenal. You have 4 other ones that look pretty good. And then you have 1 more that we couldn't get a read on. So we would have to retest. It wasn't a day five. So it's kind of like, if you really want us to do it, but we suggest this, you know? Mm-hmm. And then she was like, do you want to know the gender? And I was like, okay, sure. And I'm like, and she paused and she's like, well, this doesn't happen often. And I'm like, I look at my husband and I'm like, it's all boys, watch. It's all boys. Because even my son is like, I'm a baby sister, you know? And she looks and she's like, well, I hope you want a girl because they're all girls. And so,
oh, wow.
We just started laughing and I just really felt like God was like, hey, I hear you. You know what I mean? Right. And like I said, you know, because some people are like, oh my gosh, well, what if they're all boys? I was like, then we would have had all boys. Like, what do you think? We were going to go through this again? Hell no. Like,
right.
But
gotcha.
We were excited, you know, so that's how it went. But, you know, for people who don't really understand the whole, you know, genetic testing and this and that, we've had people that are like, well, you made them all girls. I'm like, okay, that's actually not possible. I had nothing to do with that. You know what I mean?
I took some Barbie glitter and then I combined it with some Oprah glitter and then I made a girl.
So you know how that works. But so I do like to explain that because, you know, we were honest, we did have four. And so that's four more boys from that first one. And so that's why we spoke with our doctors, CCRM, a few other doctors. And we were like, what do you think? And they were like, it's just, you got to start over. And so I was super worried because obviously I'm 7 years older than I was the last time, but it all went well. So,
and you could
just hoping for the best.
Yeah, we're just hoping for the best for you. That's amazing. I mean, this process, I think people don't realize how tough IVF is on your body. And, you know, you guys were talking about the crazy Clomids, but, you know, the shots that you have to give yourself, the timed, you know, everything, the nervousness, I mean, the amount of stress just to create a human is so intense. Like Tracy said, you know, you guys aren't ready to give up yet. What do you say to people who may not have access to another round, you know, and
yes,
really are struggling with that decision? Like, do I stop here? Do I say, okay, so like Tracy had to say one and done, you know, like this is our family.
Well, this is the soapbox that I'd like to get on because, you know, we know that we're blessed to be able to keep going. You know, we understand that we're very fortunate and that's why we started our foundation to help other couples. And that's why my next 5-year plan is to take the Bubble of Joy Fund to more clinics, first of all, and then second of all, to really work with other groups in order to try to get, you know, insurance coverage. Because you're right, it's absolutely ridiculous that people, first of all, infertility is classified as a disease. So explain to me why then insurance doesn't help with it. You know what I mean? It just blows my mind. And it's promising to see like a lot of the tech companies and now a lot of the banking industry, they're starting to provide IVF coverage for their employees. But it's still a conversation that, you know, I have a lot of people say like, oh, you know, why do you talk about this so much? Because when people talk about it so much is when change happens. Mm-hmm. And when people know that they have a voice and that they can use their voice to go to their HR department and say, hey, excuse me, like, why do we not have, you know, infertility benefits when 1 in 8 couples are going through this? Like, mm-hmm. Let me present you some options. And so that's just something that we're going to start working on because it's not fair. So over the past 5 years, I've read hundreds, probably almost thousands at this point, applications of people, you know, wanting grants. These are hard working individuals that decided to put most of the time their community first. They're police officers, they're firefighters, they're former military, they're public school teachers, people who do well in their community, and then they turn around and want to have their own family after supporting other people's families in their jobs and have nothing. And I was just looking up some of the facts. It's $23,000 national average for one round. Most people have to go through 2 to 3 rounds to have a child. So we're going to ask somebody to give up most times an entire year of salary, if not more. And then if they do even get pregnant, now their savings are drained for when they need to have that for a child. And it's not right. And I think because it's a female, fertility is still looked at as a female issue, that it's not getting the attention that it needs yet. Sorry, rant over.
No,
love it.
Please.
Preach, that, please.
Yeah, no.
No, I mean, and then, I mean, you're talking about by the time you get to infertility, there's the Clomid phase, mm-hmm. which that medicine isn't cheap. And then what's the shot you have to get in your stomach? I did that too. My husband had to like shoot
Lupron,
me in the stomach. Yes.
Valestim.
Lupron. That's $10,000. That's 10, yeah, it's 10 grand we had to pay out of our own money. Nobody gave, we had to get a loan because at the time that's all we had. I mean, it's so, and that's just, and that's in that nebulous phase when people are sort of like telling you that you could still maybe get pregnant. And right. then you go to IVF on top of it.
And don't even, I mean, and surrogacy and oh, everything else is so just, it's so stressful and it's so upsetting. I mean, even so, we're obviously doing our treatments out of state and we're on the road getting ready to go there. Anyways, got stuck in Phoenix because of the Colorado snowstorm. And so I had to go for blood work and an ultrasound by then so that I didn't miss my transfer date. And so we do all that. And then they handed me a bill of $680. And I was like, no, I've paid for my treatment. Like, yeah. This just goes to them or my insurance, because they yeah. asked for my insurance card. So I was like, yes, I have insurance. Here you go. Yeah. And they're like, oh, no, it's $680 yeah. out of pocket. And I was huh? But I've been in here for 4 seconds. Like,
yeah.
And that is so stressful. Let's go back to Tracy's other question, which is how it affects your partnership. Because I only struggled for a year to get pregnant with my daughter, but that it's so interesting because in that year, it was like the worst year of my life that far, you know, like those monthly disappointments. I had a miscarriage as well. And then you imagine timesing that by 7 or 5 in Tracy's case. And it's a nightmare. And the amount of stress and the way that sex becomes just this chore, you know, where literally there's like no, especially on the female side, there can, you know, there's no pleasure at that point. You're just at the end, your hips are in the air with a laptop, you know, like, yeah. like nothing sexy about it. How is it for you guys? And what do you think were some of the moments where you just kind of had to laugh about it or like your worst or cry?
Yeah. Yeah. I touch upon that in the book in a good chapter, because you're right. It starts out as, you know, sex to make a baby and to expand your family. And it's like the honeymoon phase. And then it literally turns into like drill sergeant phase. Mm-hmm. And you become crazy. And I do remember one time like having my iPad and being like, actually, no, wait, this has to go this way. I have to be at this angle. This is yes. correct.
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember also, I think because of my PCOS, I would take those ovulation kits where I think they're probably much more advanced, you know, 7-8 years later, but all they did was smile at me all the time.
Smiley face. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, I must be ovulating like every single day. Great. And I, so, you know, we joke and I talk about in the book where guys are like, I'd have sex every single day. Uh-huh. I can do it. And so I was like, okay, well, that's my plan. We're going to do this every single day. And that way.
Then we don't miss a day.
I'm not going to miss it. And like day 23, he was like, I can't do it. And I was like, I don't give a shit. Like chop, chop. Like we have to do this. And he was like, no, but for real, like I can't.
I can't do it.
I was like, get your shit together. Like, that yeah. is not that hard. And, you know, and it is, it's really stressful. And I try to talk about that because I do think that that's an area that people, it's hard to open up about. It's hard to talk about what it does, you know, to your sex life or as a couple. And so in the book, I try to talk about it a lot to show people like, hey, you might feel like your marriage is falling apart or that you're crazy or that like your sex life isn't what it was. And that's normal. And it's a phase and it'll come back. You know what I mean?
Eventually, but eventually it's a hard phase back. To come back from.
Because I told a girl the other day, I'm like, just like down there comes back after pushing out a kid, it eventually comes back. Like just give it time.
No, it's true. But I think the other thing that a lot of people don't think about is like, you know, you say you could have sex every day. A man could say that. But until you have to go, and I've been to the same clinic as you, they got to go downstairs and close the door to a room and they're given a cup and then they got to come up with their own sperm. Sorry, come up. That was funny. You know, it's hard on guys. It's really hard on guys.
You also just said hard on.
I'm making all the puns.
I know. I do. I try to, you know, encourage people to talk to their partners because it is awkward for them, you know, and it is, I will never forget years ago, I just have to say this real quick, this guy actually sent me this email and he was like, hey, you know, you always talk about the women's side, but let me tell you my horrific story. And so he was in the clinic and I don't know what type of clinic it was, but it, instead of having like a fluorescent ceiling light, it had like a light with like a bulb, you know? And so he said he went in there and it was so bright that he was like already panicking because he knew the nurses were out there. And yeah. He's like, are they timing me? Like what's happening? And so he was like, so I couldn't find the switch. And so I just thought like, I'll just unscrew the light bulb. Like, you know, that's what I'll do. And so he goes to unscrew the light bulb and burns his hand. So he comes out with like this, you know, inflamed hand. And the nurse goes, but you don't have to do it that hard. And he's like, no, I swear. And she was like, uh-huh, sure. Do you have your sample? Like,
she's like, whatever, perv, give me the thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they see it.
He's all like blistered.
Yeah. And you know, I will never forget that story.
Oh my gosh, that's hysterical. Yeah, it is hard. And I mean, I feel like when you look back, and I know you can relate, like there's so many times where you just, you have to laugh at it because, right. I mean, because even if you, I mean, even if you say you have sex every day, you get to a point where you're like, well, if it's not at 3:33 p.m.,
yep.
you won't get pregnant. So not only is it just whenever every day, it's like an exact time.
And I will be putting your penis.
I know. I'll be like, I remember just being like, come on, we've got 5 minutes. And like, he's like running. He'd have to drive home from work, you know? And
oh
like,
my
it's
gosh,
awful.
I put that in my book. I wish I can find it. There's literally something, and I don't know what page it's on, but it says, do you need a, and my son's upstairs, but yeah, I'm like, do you need a fucking invitation to my vagina? Like, where are you? Where are you? And he was like, I'm in a meeting. And I was like, not impressed.
Nope.
No, you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. Not anymore. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so
what were some of, do you remember any moments where you and Kyle just kind of had to look at each other and just laugh, or maybe looked at each other and wanted to kill each other?
Yes to both. You know, there were a number of times that I would just say, even through him, you know, having to give me the shots and like playing doctor, you know what I mean? And I think it's so, this is our TMI for all the listeners out there.
Not for Banta mothers.
Yeah. Like, bring it on.
To heat up the progesterone and oil, you know, I'm like, oh, like, just like, I'll put it between my legs. He like puts it down his pants and like, I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, it's real hot down there. I'm like, yeah. Well, your balls are good for something. Thank you. Like, I don't know.
So he heated it up with his, he put the progesterone down his pants to heat it up for you?
That's nice.
He just did it last night too. He's like, la la la. And I'm like, we were watching TV and I was just going to like, you know, you kind of hold it or like whatever.
Could have put it in his armpit. You know what I mean? If you need
straight,
it, body temperature.
Straight down the pants.
Well, you know, it's good. It's good juju. Just like, just infuse it.
Yeah.
So I mean, just stuff like that is like, you just go with it at some point.
I have to ask you, just having gone through, because now I'm getting flooded with memories, because you have to have time sex so much. Can you recall a time like where you guys had to sneak off and hit it that was like just so inappropriate and ridiculous and awful?
So for us, we didn't have to have timed sex because we just didn't know. And then we went straight to IVF.
Right. You went right to IVF.
For us, there was the having to do shots. And so I'll never forget, we were at a sponsored dinner, like a big corporate dinner for my husband's racing. And there had to be like 20 people there. Right. And the dinner was, you know, it was taking forever. I remember it was at a steakhouse and I'm bringing out like thing after thing. I'm like,
Come on,
I gotta do my shot right at 9:30. And so like, we're still there. And so now it's 9:45 and now I'm like so much more relaxed about my shot time. But then I was like hyperventilating. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to the bathroom first. You give it 2 minutes and then follow me. I'll meet you in the big stall. Right. And so we do it. We're like in there and I've got this like cocktail dress on and we weren't paying attention, but he's like, well, just lift your dress higher, like bend over, like blah, 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 blah. And I look down and there's like a pair of feet in the stall next to us. And I'm just like, please, please don't be somebody at our dinner. Please don't be somebody at our dinner. And, you know, so they exit first, we exit. And it was a lady at our dinner. She just looked straight at us. And I was like, this is like, we weren't telling people yet. Yeah. Like, this was our first round. And I was like, it was so awkward. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
My great. They think we left a sponsored dinner to have a quickie.
Oh, yeah. She's like, just like, can't keep my hands off of him.
He's like, I've been warming it up down my pants. Hold on just a second.
Let me get it out from under there.
And also, like, if it was a sexy moment, him being like, lift your dress up higher, that, like, doesn't really make it, like, it's a very, like, hot moment.
I know. So it's just, you know, there's times like that. And you know, though, for as hard as infertility is, like, it's nice now, even if we haven't quite completed our family, you know, how we had envisioned yet, that you can look back and be like, okay, there were so many tears and so many fights and so many trials. But, like, there was also some really funny times.
Yeah. And I do think parents or couples who go through infertility, like, you have, if you make it through to the other end, there's no words for the bond that you guys share and the strength that you have to share with each other. Like, that doesn't ever go away. And, you know, the gratitude you have for your children is immeasurable, as it is with all parents, of course, but it's a journey that two people shouldn't have to share. So when you do,
it's a big one. I completely agree.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey with everybody. And your book is amazing. We want to hold it up.
Yes. So tell us everywhere everyone can find you.
It's Amazon, online, Target, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. So all the good places. I'm pretty excited. I can't honestly believe that it finally comes out because it's been so many years in the making. So I'm pumped. But thank you, guys.
And then tell us, Samantha, where everyone can find you on social. Tell us where they can look into A Bundle of Joy.
Oh, yeah. So my social handle is @SamanthaBush. And then it's bundleofjoyfund.org. And we actually have a really cool event coming up, if I have a second to talk about it. Yeah. It's an infertility summit. And so it'll be local here in Charlotte, but we'll also have passes for online viewing. And so what it is I got a bunch of medical experts together from the Reach Clinic. So I have like an embryologist, a doctor, an IVF nurse, patients, a financial advisor through SunTrust. And we're doing a big evening where we also have community sponsors from like different supplements and acupuncture and all the things. And so anybody who's, you know, starting to try or thinking they might have to go through IVF, it's like a really safe space where they can come and ask a bunch of questions and learn things that they might not know. And then afterwards, we're going to go up to the rooftop and they're going to light up the city of Charlotte orange for National Infertility Awareness Week.
Oh, so I love that. That's so awesome.
So all that's on bundleofjoyfund.org. So we're really excited for that event.
That's excellent. Amazing.
Okay.
Well, on that note, are you ready to play a little game with us?
I am.
Okay, perfect.
So what we're going to do is set a timer for 1 minute. We call this guest bomb and bomb. Uh-oh. BOM, Band of Mothers. And we will, in 1 minute, ask you as many questions for you to speed round answer. And again, if there's something that doesn't come to mind right away, you can definitely say pass.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm a little nervous, but yes.
You got this.
I mean, you just talked about having not sex in a,
in a bathroom stall. You're good.
In a bathroom stall. Yeah, I think you're fine. Okay, here we go. Tracy, hit it.
Where do you live?
Denver, North Carolina, outside of Charlotte.
Tacos or pizza?
Pizza.
What's your middle name?
Lynn.
Who's your celebrity crush?
Oh, Ryan Reynolds.
Ooh, fries or ice cream?
Ice cream.
Do you own a vibrator?
Yes.
Do you snore?
During allergy season.
Okay.
How many tattoos do you have?
2.
Tampons or the cup?
Oh, tampons. That cup thing freaks me out. I'm not dumping that out. I know. All my friends use it. I'm so proud of them for the environment. I can't yet.
Not there yet.
What's your least favorite children's television show?
Can I go with Baby Shark because of that damn theme song?
Absolutely. What's your astrological sign?
Gemini.
What's your favorite fitness activity?
I love lifting weights.
And your vagina's name is the last TV show you watched. What is it?
Ooh, Good Girls.
Oh, that's awesome. Perfect.
I like that.
Samantha Bush, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. And if someone hasn't said it to you lately, we just want to remind you that you are an awesome mom and you are doing a great job. You got
Thank you so much. I love you guys. Like, if I had known you guys were in Colorado, I would have definitely tried to meet up with you guys. You're so much fun.
Oh, well, you know what?
Anytime, lady.
Anytime. God willing, you don't have to come back. But if you do, you look us up. We'll take you out.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well,
we'll go
great.
Let the tires out. We'll go let the air out of snow removal tires in the middle of the night.
We'll do that with you. We'll get out in the middle of the night.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. This
Thank
is wonderful.
You. Thank you. Let's keep in
so
touch.
Great to
good
meet
luck
you,
to you.
And good luck.
Yes.
We're just, we'll
yeah.
be praying for you.
We will. Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Whoa, man. That was awesome.
I'm never going to look at a bathroom stall the same again.
Oh, it's so great. I mean,
I've been there.
God. And the really, like you said, the bond between, you know, just going through that together is really, really awesome. She's doing a great job advocating for women. And
yes. And gosh, Bundle of Joy Foundation. Like, oh my gosh, what an amazing thing to do for families.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
More
let's
of that.
Get that, and let's get pelvic floor health covered by insurance, and then
breastfeeding. P.S.
Oh, and then we might feel like we can break equals? Down the patriarchy
just
a little bit.
Feel like equals. just a few things to do. Yeah. Just a few things to check off our list before That's we right. leave this earth plane.
Please share this episode yes. with anybody that you know that might be dealing with these issues, which is probably more people than you think mm-hmm. you know. And if you enjoyed it, please leave a review, please leave a comment, and join us on Facebook and our Facebook group, Band of Mothers, because we're going to have a conversation about this and kind of see, what kind of support we can give each other on there as well.
Yeah.
And make sure that you check out bomb.market, to maybe send your friend who's dealing with these kind of issues a really special something.
I mean, let me just tell you straight up, if you've got a friend going through infertility, gifts are always freaking welcome.
Always
so just
welcome.
Know that. Never question it.
I wouldn't get her like the mom bracelet.
Do not do that.
But definitely.
Don't fucking get her anything that says mom on it or anything with a baby.
But some High Plains.
And maybe not wine because you're really, it's, you kind of got to lay off the booze even though you want to. But High Plains oils for sure.
Absolutely.
Forest bathing bath salts or just a nice pair of earrings. Great idea. Always, always. I will find you if you buy someone who's trying to be a mom bracelet.
It's like but, a mom shirt.
Bomb.market. And of course, follow us on the gram at Band of Mothers Official.
That's right. And if you want to hear this podcast without commercials, download the Wondery Plus app and you will get to do that. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Love you guys.